Welcome to Hungry Dads, a couple of guys who started a podcast as an excuse to bring snack food into the house. On this week's show...
But the only way they were willing to keep the Rockefeller explosion was if I gave them the copyrights. And they could then have complete and total control and power over the characters. That meant they get to decide what the voices are, what the scripts are, what the music is. They get to program them themselves. Everything they wanted to do. And I would have absolutely nothing to do about it, no say about it. But you got to realize, back then, I still felt like the Rockefeller Explosion had a big future. Movies, cartoons. I wanted to go someplace else with the Rockefeller Explosion besides pizza restaurants. I wasn't ready just to give it up. And besides, they didn't offer me a plug nickel for the copyrights. When I spoke to Gene Cram about this, who proposed to me that I give them the copyrights to the Rockefeller Explosion, the trademarks, the copyrights, all ownership of the copyrights, he said, "Aaron, what you get out of this is that your characters, Billy Bob, will live."
What is going on?
Hello and welcome to episode 77 of the Hungry Dads Podcast. I'm Rod Budget.
I'm Hugh Gallen. Show me speech, you can act like a kid. You should have more fun than you
ever did. One of the places we touched on in episode 43, the grilling episode, at the end of that episode, we did a couple of food eulogies to places that no longer exist. And I touched on Showbiz Pizza Place, Arlington, Texas location. So anyway, Showbiz, for those who aren't familiar or haven't caught the episode, it's a place that was similar to a Chuck E. Cheese, a pizza place, but with lots of arcade games. Certainly the draw was mainly the games, the ball pit, and the animatronic band.
Talking about Showbiz Pizza and its sister organization, Chuck E. Cheese, we talked about Chuck E. Cheese as well in episode 29, Employees Only. The reason we cover these things is, look, our legions of fans know that we cover food, but more importantly, we cover the culture of food. That's why we want to talk about Showbiz Pizza. That's why we want to talk about the thing that was ancillary to the food. And there's some other people who have talked about it even more than we have.
That's right. So believe it or not, there is a documentary out there based on the animatronic band from Showbiz Pizza Places. There were multiple locations, but I believe the band was basically the same in each location.
I think that's true. They didn't travel. It wasn't an actual rock
tour. The technology hadn't been developed quite yet in the 90s for them to walk from place to place.
Yeah, there was a documentary made about the Rockefeller Explosion. This is the band that played at every Showbiz Pizza Place. And again, to be clear, this is not a real band. These are not people in costumes. These were animatronic robots that played. There was a giant bear, I think, who played the guitar. There was a duck that played the drums, and a mouse that was like a cheerleader, something like that.
Yeah, I think the band was more for the younger kids. I remember going to birthday parties when I was much younger, and the band was a big hit. Either that or it scared the kids. I think it could go either way. I think you have the crying kids who are scared by the lifelike robot animals.
Just a quick word of this documentary. Look, we're going to review it. We're going to play some clips for you, and we'll try to walk you through what it covers. On the first watch, my definite impression was that the documentary makers are trying to kind of poke fun at these folks, because what it is, it's a couple of different players in the documentary you're going to hear. One is a guy who basically invented the Rockefeller Explosion. He's the creator of it. He's very passionate about it. He wants to see them make a comeback. And then the other featured person is someone who's such a big fan that he's gone about collecting the old robots. And we talked about food documentaries and Jump the Shark, and I want to just bring up one note that I brought up then, and it's that whenever I watch a documentary, I like to watch it kind of with a critical eye and take everything with a grain of salt, because, again, as you listen to the clips and hear our commentary, it's going to be kind of clear that these people are being poked fun at. But it's never lost on me that these are people with passion. I mean, look, you're listening to a couple guys who do a podcast about food, and, you know, these are people with a passion, and they're not hurting anybody, and they're having good fun, and you know what? They're very admirably dedicated to what they're doing. And hey, that's really nothing to actually make fun of. And I think the parts that are funny, I think even they recognize how humorous it is.
So without further ado,
this is the Rockefeller Explosion.
Showbiz Pizza Place was a restaurant in the 80s that was like a miniaturized version of Disney World.
It had the rides, it had the games, it had pizza, it had beer for your parents, and they had an animatronic show called the Rockefeller Explosion.
So I was curious as to what do they do when the curtains close? Do they look around at each other, or, I mean, what do they do, you know? And then when I walked up, they was just staring. And to me, that was really like they was more alive then than it was when the show was playing, because they're just staring down at you like, what are you doing back here, you know? So I very quickly got back off stage.
as the documentary starts, you just hear from several, surprisingly many, Rockafire Explosion enthusiasts. They're talking about how much they love Showbiz Pizza, and then specifically the Rockafire Explosion. And my favorite piece of that is a clip you just heard where one of the fans is saying, I wonder what they do afterwards. You know, he watches the band and then the curtains close and he wonders, wow, what happens next? And he says it from a childlike place, but he's a grown man. And what you don't know when you're listening here is that he's standing next to one of his own robots. So this is the guy who has gone out and bought the old robots and is now repairing them, refurbishing them, and has this like outside garage where he's rebuilt the stage, rebuilt the animatronic band, and has it set up to play.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Rockafire Explosion.
One of my favorite parts of the documentary is the big reveal as Chris Thrash, the enthusiast, is just kind of talking and walking through his yard, and you don't really know where he's going. He's just kind of reminiscing, and then he goes to this trailer and opens the door, and there's the band, like, in the trailer with the lights on, and it's dark outside, and it looks just like it did in the commercial, or if you ever went to Showbiz, and it's, like, amazing.
And you come to find that it's not just a stage piece that's set up for display. He's got it rigged up to move, to sing, the whole deal. One of the reasons you say you got to respect this guy is he clearly has the technical ability to do the wiring and the robotics. I mean, this is just a guy out in the middle of nowhere. He's not, as far as I know, a professional engineer or anything, and he loved this enough to figure out how to rebuild and program the robots. That's pretty impressive. So I think another interesting thing you're going to realize about this documentary is it's almost done in the tone of one of those like VH1 Behind the Music. Like it opens saying, you know, the Rockafire Explosion, this is their story. So they treat the documentary a little bit like a Behind the Music, and with that they run down the band members of the Rockafire Explosion, and they start with these great names. Fats Geronimo, he's a gorilla piano player. They got Duke LaRue, who's the drummer, and he's described as smart and sophisticated. Billy Bob, the guitar player, the Looney Bird, Earl Schmerl, Rolf, who's a comedian, puppeteer, and Mitzi Mozzarella, who's the female lead vocalist. And these fans are describing kind of intimate details of their personalities and their storylines.
And slot. Peach Bear is the lead guitarist of the band. You know, he does a lot of guitar solos, and he tends to like rock and roll music. And he's sort of like almost an English major. He always talks real appropriate and seems to be really smart.
But the coolest thing about Beach Bear was he had his own spotlight for his guitar. So, you know, when he'd have his rock solos and he'd be rocking out on his guitar, you know, you could watch that spotlight come and shine on his guitar.
Yeah, I think it's pretty impressive just the character development. I think as a kid, I certainly didn't realize that they all kind of had these distinct personalities, and I just went and watched them kind of play the music. But the fact that they all have these very distinct and fleshed out personalities, I think, is a credit to just how amazing the Rockafire Explosion is.
The Rockafire Explosion were big in the 80s. And to me, anytime I look around now, it seems that all things 80s are having a resurgence. But there's a fan group out there, and their obsession is the Rockafire Explosion. We all seem to be about the same age. We're late 20s, early 30s. We grew up with them.
Most people in my regular life, I call it my regular life, my work life, my family, close friends and that, they don't always understand the Rockafire Obsession. To them, it strikes them as something odd. They don't really get it, but it's pretty much an everyday thing. It's not something I ever really take a vacation from. And it's one of those things that really has infiltrated most every little part of my everyday life.
I think the biggest revelation during that short segment was, for the first time, you heard an admission that the obsession with Rockafire isn't normal, and one of the fans kind of admitted his family and his friends and coworkers don't really get it, and he understands that. It's an important point. Like, I think they all acknowledge that it's a little bit quirky, but they all seem very down to earth. And
as you watch it, there's certain shots where you think the documentary maker is kind of trying to poke fun at these people, but then there are moments where they're giving them a little bit of credit where credit is due.
So come on in. This is, of course, the mess we call creative engineering. One time Michael Jackson came to visit us, and I was so embarrassed about the mess, and it was that I didn't bring him in here. I brought him to another one of the shops we had that was all cleaned up, and he wasn't that entertained. I should have brought him over here and shown him our mess.
And then the documentary introduces us to Aaron Fletcher, the inventor of the Rockfire explosion. Tells you how he kind of got into the industry. He's a self-proclaimed inventor and legitimately is an inventor. Clearly a smart guy, but also kind of a, if I call him a huckster, is that a fair description? He's more salesman than he is inventor. He still believes in the Rockfire explosion. He thinks they're due for a comeback. And I think he still thinks that these robots are like the pinnacle of technology. He's still very proud of his creation. Definitely one of the best characters of this documentary.
I was just on the internet one day and bored, and I said, you know what? Just let me type this Showbiz Pizza in. And sure enough, I come up on the this guy named Travis. He was a fan also, and he realized that, you know, there was nothing out there, and he brought a lot of fans together that I didn't even know existed. I thought maybe I was just crazy or something and just couldn't let go of it. And but actually, there's a lot of people just like me. You know, except I'm lucky enough to have the show, you know. It really surprised me. It really did, because I had no idea, because so many years had went by. And I thought it was just a forgotten subject, because it got to where if I went to Chuck E. Cheese and I asked somebody about it, they was getting where people was like, what is it now? You know, I was like, gosh, it's just totally being forgotten. It was so great. How can you not know what it is? And maybe it's just me, you know, maybe it's just me. And then I seen, wow, there's a whole fan community of people that feel the same way I do. And that made me feel a lot better. And, you know, I immediately felt like I was home. And I was where I needed to be.
It was a huge dream come true for us. It was like being in rock and roll. Exactly like being in rock and roll.
So as the documentary continues, you know, they're, again, just giving us a little bit more about the lives of these Rockfire explosion enthusiasts, and you get a sense of where they're coming from. They're recapturing their youth. They are just enjoying it as fans. They're fascinated by it. And then you're hearing from the creator, again, Aaron Fechter, and kind of the rise to success with his company and the marriage with Showbiz Pizza with the, making the robots. You get a piece of that story. But then you get to, that. I think, that moment that you always get in the rock documentary is it's over. The band has been pulled now from the Showbiz Pizza franchises.
It's taken a dark turn.
And they play this great tape. It's like a corporate tape. It's called the Rockfire Explosion Removal Tape. And it gives, like, it's for the franchise owners, I guess, to know how to disassemble. And it's, and it says, all pieces must be destroyed.
Billy Bob's campfire. Looney Bird's can. All rocks and flowers. And destroy all of these props as they will not be used again.
It just blew my mind and changed everything then. I thought that for 10 years they was gone. It was just nothing. Just gone.
Rockfire Explosion was replaced by
Munch's Make-Believe Band. And if you can see Munch's, if you watch a documentary, like, it's like this big grimace looking purple guy, this terrible looking bird, and like a, I don't know, mustached Italian waiter. It just looks like a random hodgepodge of terrible looking characters.
Honestly, they do not look nearly
as professional.
As professional or attractive, or the character doesn't look as good. Yeah, they definitely look much frumpier. Than they're a genuine Rockfire Explosion. And you know what? You can, even if you compare the names, I think it's fitting. Rockfire Explosion has an energy to it. Yep. There's something cool about it. Munch's Make-Believe Band sounds just about like that. They look like Munch. Let's see what the Rockfire Explosion fans think of Munch's Make-Believe Band.
And I really didn't think too much of it. And I remember going in there and seeing this bastardized version of the Rockfire Explosion on stage and just being completely appalled by it. And it had been probably a couple years since I had been in one, and it was at least another 4 or 5 years before I ever stepped foot in one again, because I had no interest at all in seeing the Chuck E. Cheese characters up there in place of the Rockfire.
But the only way they were willing to keep the Rockfire explosion was if I gave them the copyrights, and they could then have complete and total control and power over the characters. That meant they get to decide what the voices are, what the scripts are, what the music is. They get to program them themselves, everything they wanted to do. and I would have absolutely nothing to do about it, no say about it. But you got to realize, back then, I still felt like the Rockefeller Explosion had a big future. Movies, cartoons. I wanted to go someplace else with the Rockefeller Explosion besides pizza restaurants. I wasn't ready just to give it up. And besides, they didn't offer me a plug nickel for the copyrights. When I spoke to Gene Cram about this, who proposed to me that I give them the copyrights to the Rockefeller Explosion, the trademarks, the copyrights, all ownership of the copyrights, he said, "Aaron, what you get out of this is that your characters, Billy Bob, will live. They'll live on. But let me tell you something, if you don't accept this deal and if you don't give us your copyrights, your characters are going to die. We're going to get rid of them and we're going to replace them with Chuck E. Cheese." I said, "Okay, I'll take that challenge. I'll take that challenge. I will do something with those characters. And I will do it without you then. But I will not just give you those characters. My life, my blood, my voice, my heart, and believe me, all of the closest people in my lives, and that included all those men in the studio and women in the studio who helped me, our lives depend on this. And I'm going to keep those characters, and we're going to do something with them."
So they went through what's called concept unification. And what it basically became was they took the Rockefeller robots, left the animation, the animatronics, everything that was on the inside pretty much stayed intact. They just kind of rearranged the characters, slapped different cosmetics on them, and tried to pass it off as a completely different show.
And that was the beginning of the end in terms of the Rockefeller being in Showbiz Pizza. And I think for a time they did actually still have the Rockefeller in the stores, but after about 1990, they converted the concept over to Chuck E. Cheese, and that was that.
Business goes bad for Showbiz Pizza. Aaron Fechter will not give them creative control. So he picks up his toys, his Rockefeller toys, and he leaves. So now the company has to repurpose these robots with new characters that they own.
Like these are my children, you know. I'm concerned about the temperature in the room all the time. I'm concerned with the humidity. All these factors play in how well the characters do, and I always want them to be at the top notch. So it's like a parent caring for their child. You know, you don't want to see your child suffer, not for one minute. And it's almost like they're real to me, and I don't want them to suffer. If I know something hurts them, then I got to take that away. You know, I want them to be running good and feeling good all the time. It's just like having children.
It's almost understandable because he spent so much of his life and so much time.
Like, he put all that work into it.
Yeah.
He's like, there's a healthiness to his attitude. And he's also like, he's not ashamed. And that's pretty awesome, actually.
But that's what's wrong with the animatronic business. You build this really cool stuff that everyone says is really cool. You spend a fortune building it. You spend a fortune taking it to the convention and showing everybody, and everybody oohs and ahs over it. And then nobody buys it because it's too expensive. That's the business. Welcome to the world of business.
Again, this creator, Aaron Fechter, taking us through creative engineering his company. It's clearly a shell of its former self. It's dark hallways, dank,
old, scary masks.
And he goes through with a lot of enthusiasm showing you how it all went. But then every so often this anger comes out. You know, it's almost like he's saying to the world, "But I work so hard and I'm so smart and my ideas are so good. How come nobody's buying it?" And he's angry about it and naive about like the realities of the fact that it's over.
People today, children today, I don't think relate to moving robots. So I really don't see restaurants and amusement parks being where the stuff is going.
And I think that the fans, the Rockefeller is going to live on in their homes, in their hearts, and in their memories. And I think that's pretty much what the legacy of the Rockefeller is going to be. You know, they were a pop icon. They were huge at the time, and I think they really deserve to be remembered for what they were.
I picture it being a name brand that everybody knows again. And I would like to be a part of making it go there. If it goes to cartoons or t-shirts or shows going back in restaurants, whatever its future may be, I would like to say that I could have a hand in that. I think back to when I was a little kid sitting at that table eating pizza and thinking it in my mind that one day I'd like to have that show, but never really thinking I'd have it. And then actually taking it and bringing it back for a new generation to enjoy it. That's where I'd like to see it go.
YouTube has been such a phenomenon with the Rockefeller and bringing everybody back into perspective as far as I remember them. I saw them as a kid, you know, and most of them are grown up now and they have kids of their own. And they're like, I want my kid to see this.
And as people left and as rooms closed down, things just sort of just became stagnant. You know, the things that sat there started collecting dust. They started deteriorating. Masks started melting in the heat. It sort of became spooky. And it happened over a large number of years. And as we go through the shop and we look at all of these things that are still here but deteriorating, it is spooky. But it's strange in a way because I don't really feel like that much time has passed.
Towards the end of the documentary, and I think they are trying to make kind of a deeper point that, you know, Chris Thrash is so happy and just brought to tears of joy by resurrecting the Rockefeller explosion, whereas the original kind of creator, Aaron Fechter, is kind of this broken, sad man.
Yeah, the documentary talks to a lot of different people, but we follow these two main characters. And yeah, I do think you're right. I never picked up on it before when watching it, but they do create a great juxtaposition, I think, between the wide-eyed dreamer that is Aaron Fechter, and that basically led to, in his eyes, or in many people's eyes, kind of a failure. He thought big, and then he fell short, and that's the sad story. And then you've got Chris Thrash, a simple man with a simple desire to save up enough money to get his hands on one animatronic band. And he did it, and he's set for life. He's as happy as a man can be with that simple, simple goal.
So as we wrap up, again, I believe this is a original song that Chris has reprogrammed the band to play. It's very impressive.
Yeah, it's very cool. He syncs the band to play popular music. And presumably he could do whatever song you wanted to do.
It is impressive, like in the faster parts of the song, the puppets playing the guitar much faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they keep surprisingly good sync.
And the drummer looks like he's actually drumming with the beat.
So at the end, we find out that Chris and his wife actually opened a restaurant.
Oh, wow.
Kind of revisiting Showbiz Pizza and the Rockefeller Explosion. And so the documentary ends showing that Chris Thrash opened what he called the Showbiz Pizza Zone. He opened a restaurant with his animatronic band. We just did a quick search. It looks like it closed, which is a shame. Would love to have ended the story with him kind of meeting his dream of bringing it back to the populace. But hey, he tried. Good for him. And Aaron Fechter is still making inventions. And we wish him good luck.
Hungry Dad. Visit our website at hungrydads.com. Follow us on Twitter at hungry_dads. This has been a Hungry Dads production.
Rockefeller Explosion. The documentary by director, Brett Whitcomb.
Billy Bob's Campfire. Looney Bird's Can. All rocks and flowers. And destroy all of these props as they will not be used again.
Why don't you love me?
Time Warp.
So tonight I'm just going to jump right in with a heartfelt eulogy to Showbiz Pizza Place, Arlington, Texas location. Our listeners are probably familiar, most of them, with Showbiz. It was a big establishment in the 80s and early 90s, kind of coming out of the whole Chuck E. Cheese craze. The Showbiz Pizza Place had an arcade, it had a band, it had a ball pit. It had pizza buffet. It had fun. I will mention, for our listeners out there who were Showbiz Pizza, even if you're not a Showbiz Pizza fan, I think it would be interesting. But if you are, you definitely have to check out a documentary called Rockefeller Explosion. And it's about the band. If you know Showbiz, you'll know Billy Bob was the bear with like the overalls. It was the animatronic band that played music.
And the name of the band was the Rockefeller Explosion, right?
Oh, yes, what a cool name of the band the documentary. And I don't want to give too much away, but basically the Rockefeller Explosion lives on. They were at one point kind of abandoned, but they've been rescued. And I'll just leave it at that.
One final never-ending tour in a man's garage.
With that, a eulogy to Showbiz Arlington, Texas location. It was a great privilege for me to have met Showbiz Arlington, Texas location, and I can still remember that initial encounter very clearly, although it was about 30 years ago. I recall that a gentle yet rambunctious pizza arcade had sprung from a previously abandoned parking lot near our local mall,
It was as if weeds had magically transformed into pepperonis. Beer bottles had morphed into a fun-loving band of hillbilly animal misfits, and abandoned shopping carts banded together to become arcade games. In his early years, Showbiz Arlington, Texas location tried to enlist in the military, but due to his problems with eyesight and general lack of mobility, he was not accepted, thankfully for us. He was instead forced to pursue his second loves of animatronics, animals, small rides, mediocre pizza, pools of plastic balls, and tokens. Showbiz Arlington, Texas location was always an avid coin collector. In his prime, Showbiz Arlington, Texas location was the life of every party with groundbreaking arcade games such as Mortal Kombat, Q-Bert, and Paperboy. The Rock-a-Fire explosion was laying down some mean beats, and a buffet of pizza stretched as far as the eye could see. Showbiz Arlington, Texas location was always a happy, contented man who never wanted much out of life other than the simple, quiet pleasures, like Papa Shot, Whack-A-Mole, and anything else with flashing lights and blaring computer-generated music. He was a very sociable person and had many friends. He was well-liked and respected, and he was someone you could trust and rely on, someone you could confide in and ask for advice. I recently heard a story from Showbiz's good friend, Ronald McDonald, Fort Worth, Texas location. It seems Ronald was considering getting rid of the Filet-O-Fish sometime in the mid-80s, but Showbiz discouraged it, telling Ronald, "Kids need that fish filet, Ronnie. Where else are they going to go to find cheese melted on a deep-fried cod flank?" To which Ronald replied, "I don't know, Showbiz. Why don't you offer the Filet-O-Fish instead, brother?" To which Showbiz reportedly said, "Damn, Ron, I never thought about it. Would it work in a pizza buffet format?" To which Ronald replied, "Nah, I guess not." Then, and this is where Showbiz shows his true colors, he turns to Ronald in a very serious way and says, "You're right, it wouldn't quite work." I think that story best sums up the kind of beauty and grace that Showbiz Arlington, Texas location showed throughout his life. Showbiz Arlington, Texas location died in his sleep one late night in 1992. I hadn't seen him in many years, but I had heard his health was failing, the buffet had contracted to a single pepperoni pizza, the band was breaking up due to big egos and various addictions. Be that as it may, I know Showbiz Arlington, Texas location has been somewhat missed by some of the people who knew and loved him. He's in a better place now, imploded into a cloud of asbestos for all kids at the adjacent mall to enjoy for the rest of eternity.
Wow. Wow, Rod.
That was tough.
Rod, that was touching and impressive. And if you heard a chuckle from this side of the mic, it was only because there's a phenomenon when someone's exceedingly sad. Sometimes they just can't help but laugh.
It's nervous.
And
it's
the nervous laughter being touched with the emotion. You clearly loved Showbiz Pizza, Arlington, Texas location.
It shows.
And
I don't know how much more I can talk about it, but the laughing I get. I mean, I do that sometimes, but
now this tribute that
you feel drained. I feel drained.
I have to inquire just a little bit. This tribute is obviously from personal experience. You shared some special times there yourself. When did you learn that the Showbiz Pizza Arlington, Texas location had gone away?
I may have first learned about it while I was in New York City, maybe 20 years later, through talking to a friend or something, an old high school buddy maybe, you know, said, "Hey, I got some rough news, buddy. Are you sitting down?" And I said, "Oh, man, yeah, break it to me." And he said, "Showbiz Arlington, Texas location's gone, man. Imploded."
It's tough being so far away and getting that news, feeling like there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, there was nothing I could do about it. I still think about it quite a bit, but I'm getting over it. You know, there are still days where that's all I can really think about. But the ski ball, really, I mean, just spent so many days rolling that ball into the hole and never getting it into the center, but still getting a lot of tickets and then getting a ping pong mallet thing. I mean, that's childhood right there.
Time warp. Last one, Chuck E. Cheese. You're the pizza man, the pizza maker, and part of your job is to throw on the suit and go entertain the kids. You said this was a fun break from the kitchen, which I was a little bit surprised. Now, this one's in the eye of the beholder. Tell me why you said that.
This was the toughest one, I think. Here's my thinking.
making pizzas at Chuck E. Cheese is no bargain. It's repetitive. It's probably, during busy times, pretty, you know, you gotta make a lot of pizzas. Not that donning a mouse costume and mingling with kids is a bargain, but my thinking is if you can go back and forth, it just provides some variety. Neither of them on their own, I would say, are stellar positions, but I think if you mix them up, it just provides a little variety and a break from the pizza kitchen and a break from the mouse costume.
I'd be with you until I thought about the costume itself and that it might be kind of stinky. And that kind of took me right away from it because I was thinking the same thing. And then I thought literally climbing into that costume, there's a lot of details that would really make a difference. But assuming that the costume is clean and, you know, maybe I would be willing. But if it's like a gross, stinky costume that's community used, I think I'd rather just make the pizzas.
Let's not forget you're a giant mouse slash rat, though, so it probably should be a little bit stinky. I think that makes it a little more believable to the kids.
You're definitely going to get kicked in the groin, and that is not worth it. God bless you. to the fine people who serve
to the fine. We've all worked at a Chuck E. Cheese at one point, whether it be literally or figuratively.